Reading from the Bhagavad Gita is this, from the 7th chapter, text number 8. Mata parataram nanyat 7-8. Kinchit asti janam jaya mahi sarvam idam protam sutramani ganaiva. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. So in this way we see that Lord Krishna is the connection. The connection between everything in this world. So many things are there, but Krishna is the underlying factor. Therefore it is said, Stavra jangama deke na deke tare murti sarvra hai ista deva spurti. That while looking, we are seeing moving forms, non-moving forms, but actually we're seeing behind all these things, we're seeing Krishna. And thus, when we see Krishna behind everything, we see that everything is leading back to Krishna. Everything is ultimately Krishna's arrangement. And gradually we begin to see reality from Krishna's perspective. Not only looking from our temporary perspective, where we currently are, you know, a body with a certain lifespan, a body with a certain karmic history, and all these things that limit us in so many ways and are frustrating. Everyone in material life is frustrated. No one is satisfied with the condition they are in. Everyone is looking to change it somehow or other. That's the situation. Because we identify with the wrong thing. We identify with what is limited, the material existence. Whereas by nature, we're eternal and unlimited, and therefore the soul is not restricted in any way. It is the material body that is restrictive. It is the material mind that is restrictive. It is the material intelligence that is restrictive. It is our karma that is restrictive. It is time that is restrictive. The whole world here. Therefore, frustration is part of life. Everyone experiences frustration. No one. No one, unless one is fully transcendental. Like Yudhisthira Maharaj. Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was fully transcendental. And it is said that Yudhisthira Maharaj was able to achieve everything in his life that he desired by Krishna's grace. He did that Rajasuya sacrifice, which is a very difficult sacrifice because one has to basically establish himself like the emperor of the world. So, you know, the world is big and there's always part of the world that doesn't quite agree with that idea. So then you're having trouble. So there was lots of trouble, but eventually Yudhisthira achieved that goal. And then he performed that sacrifice. And of course, in the sacrifice, he was not the one who was glorified as the most important personality, but he glorified Krishna as the most important personality. I saw something similar in India at the time of the installation of our Parthasarathi in Delhi, when the Prime Minister of India came to open the temple. Now, I happened to be there before, and black cat commandos came to screen the temple to make sure there was no security risk, and these black cats were walking around with big dogs and they were checking out the whole place with metal detectors and so on. And one moment my room burst open and I was sniffed by the dog. I was tested by the metal detector. I was not explosive. I was not a security risk And I got the VVIP status and I was allowed in during the time that the president or the prime minister was going to come. Everyone else was locked out. But anyway, the prime minister gave a speech, and in this speech he said, today is a significant moment, and everyone is full of expectation. And why wouldn't they? Because the most important personality in India is present for the function today. So no wonder that everyone is excited. Today, the most important personality, Krishna himself, is personally present. And that the Prime Minister of India said, that impressed me, that at least a Prime Minister could recognize Krishna as the most important. That is a fact. When we can realize that Krishna is the most important, then we begin to slowly see through Krishna's eyes. Krishna, in the Bhagavad Gita, the first thing he does with Arjuna is that he calls upon the eternal perspective, not on the temporary. We only see the temporary. And in the temporary, everything looks... there's good sides and bad sides, but it looks like a difficult situation. In the eternal situation, nothing is difficult. There are no problems. There are no problems in our relationship with Krishna. There are problems in relationship with everything else. There are problems in relationship with our body. There are problems in relationship with our family, in relationship with our country, in relationship with the environment, and you can just go on and list it, in relation to finance. So many problems you can, in relation to authorities, in relation, you can make a long list of problems that we have in relation to. But in relation to Krishna, there is no problem. No problem at all. It is the one problem-free relationship. We don't realize it. We still impose so many problems on the relationship with Krishna also. This relationship is so complicated. It's so difficult. But actually, it's not a fact. It's like, because it's all there. Everything is there. With others, you don't know what is there. Can I trust this person? Can I not trust this person? How do I know? How can I be sure? Is it a facade or is it not a facade? Right? What is behind it all? No, with Krishna, you know what you get. Yeah? You get the... you don't get Putana, right? Who came with a mask, but then behind it, there was a deadly witch. No, with Krishna, you get Suridam Sarvadeinam, the friend of all living beings. So all this is a fact. Anyway, that is the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. And we are recommended to slowly see with Shastra Sakshus, to see through Krishna's eyes, and to look from the eternal perspective. That's one thing. Meanwhile, Krishna is giving us transcendental knowledge. Krishna has also given us the holy name. He's present in that form of the holy name, which is a powerful means of purification. You just chant the holy name, and gradually it pushes everything away. That is the nature of the holy name. Everything else begins to disappear, gets pushed out of our life, because the holy name is Krishna, who is the supreme pure, and therefore all impurities are disappearing. So to bring in the holy name is a good idea. And then, besides the holy name and transcendental knowledge, there is one more factor in our life. And that factor in our life, that is life itself. Life itself is also enlightening us, is also our teacher. Because Krishna is merciful to all living beings, it is said that the Uttama Adhikari is seeing that everyone is perfectly situated, because Krishna is taking care of everybody. Nobody is neglected by Krishna. Krishna makes arrangements for everyone's purification. So there's no difficulty, no problem. Everything is fine, says the Uttamadhikari. Krishna is taking care of everyone. So that is true. That is true. Therefore, through life itself, Krishna is making arrangements for our purification also. So I was reading a story which I'll share with you, and it's like, in this story, life is compared to a house. And it says that Krishna is entering into that house and is renovating the house. Now we knew it had to be done. We knew there were things in our life that needed fixing. So it's Krishna is fixing these things, the illicit activities, the inappropriate elements, meat, fish, eggs, gambling, intoxication, lust, greed, anger, envy, madness, illusion, all these things, they have to go. And Krishna is taking them out of the house. So we're not surprised. So in this way, Krishna has been renovating our house, and it all seemed to make sense. But as of late, what is he doing? He's breaking the whole house. No, really. I mean, he is doing all kinds of things. He's turning everything upside down. He's breaking the whole life. What on earth is he doing? Is Krishna, you know? We thought that he was going to fix our house and make it like a pleasant little cottage, but it's not a fact. He is adding a wing here and a wing there. He's building a palace, and he's planning to live in it himself. This is actually what is going on. So, in this way, the purification is not only going on by reading Bhagavad Gita, and not only going on by chanting Hare Krishna, but it's also going on by life itself. Well, you don't even need gray hairs to sort of realize this, you know. I guess, you know, it is said Pragya is about 5 years old. It is the age where you can understand how things work. You begin to sort of figure out how the world works, and you just begin to realize it, you know. Watch out. You know, at five, you kind of know fire burns and water, you can drown and so many other things. Before five, all kinds of things can happen. Like, I myself, when I was three, I thought I could walk on water. But I wasn't entirely self-realized as yet. I tried it. I was quite convinced I could do it. But still, a few little things that needed to be attained before the act was fully successful. But some young men, unknown young men, jumped in the water and saved me. And as such, I'm here today offering my respects to that person. So like this, Krishna teaches us through life so many things, and that is very important. Now, one of the principles in life is the Purna Musika Bhav principle. The Purna Musika Bhav principle basically is the be a mouse again principle. I don't know if you've ever been a mouse, but I guess all of us have been. All of us have been in a position where we didn't have much power and where we wished that we had more. But then gradually, through good fortune, through education, we came up. And from mouse, we made it through cat. Oh, yes. And, you know, life got better. No, really. I mean, you know, but still there were dogs and so on, and it was still not satisfying. Yeah. So, you know, still frustrated. But we had some more education and got another diploma, and eventually we got a degree, you know. I mean, dog, you know. Like, we got our dog degree and finally suitably educated and so on. But yeah, even when you're a top dog, you know, it still is like frustrating. It still doesn't fully satisfy it, because there's still that one outstanding personality who's greater than the average, you know, like some really a tiger. And man, is that a frustration that there are like people with more stars and stripes than we have. This is really not something we would, it's difficult to live with. So one day we also desire to be tiger. But then, it's not so easy to be a tiger, because it goes to your head. I mean, you start to think, I am somebody, if you know what I mean. I've got stripes, you know what I mean? Lots of. Yes. You don't. And then the inherent selfishness that is found within all conditioned soul now emerges in a raw form. Whereas in the mouse, it comes out in a slight peep, right? And not really like that assertive. Once we come to the tiger level, that inherent selfishness begins to manifest now in an outrageous roar. Who can stop me now that I am the greatest? Then, at that point, our pride begins to devour ourselves. And at that point, the yogi said to the tiger, who licked his lips and said, "Oh tiger, what do you want now?" The tiger said, "I want to eat you. Purna musikabhav, be a mouse again." So life is such that just when we were either tiger or well on the way to be a tiger, even sometimes from the dog level, right, one is already brought back to the mouse position. But mouse again, purna musikabhav. So this mechanism is actually the law of karma. The law of karma is known as the law of action and reaction, but I'd like to introduce you to today as the law of to be a mouse again. Yes, this is the situation, because that is what karma does to us. It reduces us. See, it reduces us. You get some karma catches up with us and reduces us. Karma is a funny thing, because it's supposed to be a reaction for something, but for what? What if I break my leg? It's your karma. All right, but for what? For what? Well, you must have stepped on somebody's toes. Whose toes? I don't know whose toes. That's my problem. So what's the point? Just if I give this boy in front of me like a serious slap, he'll go like, "What did you do that for? What'd you do that for?" Like, it's just your karma. What for? Right? It's a reaction to your previous sinful actions. Right? Yeah, but what action? What did I do? Right? That doesn't matter. What's the point? I get punished for something that I don't know what I've done. What's the point? So this karma is a little bit confusing. Because we think in terms of like punishment, relating, and then repentance, like becoming aware of like our mistakes, and we start repenting, and then, after that repentance, we correct ourselves. And we think that's the kind of the mechanism of punishment. But there is another level of punishment, which is a more primitive level. It's the way you punish an animal. Just a stick. Bang, okay, animal knows, not to the left. Because if you go to the left, you get beaten up, all right, that's clear. And after a while, the animal doesn't go to the left anymore. So karma does that also to us. It reduces us. It takes away our pride. It puts us in a humble, dependent position.
And in this way,
gradually, our false ego is being destroyed through this law of action and reaction. Sometimes, maybe a physical ability is taken away. It's painful, you know. So, like, you know, the famous composer, Beethoven, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da, went deaf. You know, like, yeah. I mean, that's something. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, maybe his compositions were too loud. You know, sometimes also think so. Da-da-da-da, you know. But he went deaf. That was intense, but also kind of ironic. How it works. How he was reduced from the master to, you know, someone who was deaf, could not hear anymore. The master who could hear, you know, with the perfect ear. Because I was talking about music today with some people, and it's about an ear. It's all about an ear. You have to have an ear. If you have an ear, that's it. You know, you just, the ear is the essence of music. And if you don't have the ear, then it becomes difficult. Therefore, people who say they can't sing, that's not true. They can't listen. They can't listen. Yeah. Therefore, you have to teach them to listen. And then once they start listening, then they sing. Yeah, they sing a note that is sort of like, I can't really do it properly, but whatever. It's off, right? Because they're lazy. And you say, listen, you know, listen. You're not listening. So by listening, actually, one can perform this music. Well, but then it's taken away. Be a mouse. So have you also been a mouse? I've been a mouse a couple of times in my life. Seriously. I mean, serious mouse, you know. And something to think about, right? Suddenly a mouse again. I think some of you can appreciate what I'm talking about. The mouse dynamics, you know, and those who cannot, they will in due course of time understand what I'm talking about. Right? It relates to that story of the king in ancient India who had a court pundit, a learned scholar who could answer any question. And when the king one day had a question to the pundit, and he said, my dear Pandit, please tell me, what is the daily work of God? Pandit said, well, the creation. He said, no, I'm asking not about the one-time work of God. I'm asking about the daily work of God. Creation he does one time. What does he do with it? What is his daily work? Pandit says, that's an unusual question. Your Majesty, I need 1 week to consult the scriptures. In 1 week he couldn't find the answer, so he decided that a relative had suddenly become very ill and that like, he was forced to go and visit that relative. What to do? So he sent a message to the court, but, you know, we'd be back as soon as possible. Meanwhile, as he was leaving town, he came across one of his followers. This man was a simple man. He was herding cows. But somehow or other, he was a disciple. So the disciple asked the guru, he asked him, oh, you are going? He said, oh, the king is in a difficult mood these days. And he asked a strange question. I'm not sure what's going to happen. If I won't be able to answer these questions, not going to test the waters. So this family member suddenly fell ill. What to do? So I have to go. What was the question? Strange question. It's not in any scripture or anything. What was the question? What is the daily work of God? Oh, that's an easy question, said the cowherd then. That's an easy question. Oh, you can answer that question. You answer. Yes, I will answer, but to the king directly. All right. And soon after that, the pundit appeared in the court along with his disciple, a simple man who smelled like cows. And the pundit said, Your Majesty, actually, your question is very simple. Therefore, my disciple will answer the question. So then, the king said, looked at him and said, He will answer the question. Yes. How in India. Move ahead like that, which is Indian confirmation. And sure enough, so the coward man sat down on the ground. The king seated on his throne. So the king said, Okay, go ahead and answer the question. The coward man said, Your Majesty, please permit me, before answering the question, to ask one question first. All right, the king said, granted. Then the coward man said, Your Majesty, is it true that according to the Vedas, the one who answers the question should sit higher than the one who asked the question? So the king looked at him, and this was outrageous. He looked at this outrageous personality. He looked at the royal guard, and the king just said, You want to sit on the throne? And the coward man simply said, Well, Your Majesty, what does it say in the Vedas? So the king came down the throne and sort of gave a signal to the royal guard that if he doesn't answer the question now, then, cut his head. Then the coward man sat on the throne and said, Your Majesty, your question is already answered. At this stage, the blood pressure of the king dangerous levels, really. So therefore, in order to save his life, the coward man was compassionate and said, But I will still tell you the answer. He said, The daily work of God is to elevate those who are humble and to pull down those who are proud. So in this way, we are appreciating and we're chanting Hare Krishna, and I'm already at the dope level. Not really. The way I'm chanting these days. It's like... Levels of chanting, yes. I'm seeing things sometimes when I'm chanting. Yes. Lights, Lights. Yes. Wonder what he has brought. When I chant, I see a red light. Prabhupada said, Keep on chanting and it will go away. It's like something. We go to different levels of advancement and so on. Then somehow or other we are reduced again. Satsarupa Maharaj was always different, actually. There was a time when, after Srila Prabhupada, there were these 11 successors, gurus, and Satsarupa Maharaj was the simple one, because they'd come to Vrindavan and they'd, you know, most would come with a Mercedes and so on, but Satsuru Maharaj would come with a rickshaw, right, unannounced, you know, to the gate. So he was simple. So even in Prabhupada's presence, he was simple. And on one occasion, he said to Prabhupada, he said, "I'm nothing." And Prabhupada said, "You're not nothing, you're something, but you are not what you think you are." And in this way, Prabhupada put it all in perspective. "You're not nothing, you're something, but you are not what you think you are." Boom. Three times. You know? Bang, bang, bang. Three times. Okay. "I'm not nothing, I'm something, but I'm not what I think I am." It took some time for the penny to drop. You can understand. Not all at once. So, in this way, sometimes Prabhupada was like a thunderbolt and in training people, in bringing them down to humility. Otherwise, other times, he would conquer them with humility. Like in the early days, one devotee would say to Prabhupada, in the matchless gifts days, one devotee said to Prabhupada, "Sometimes when I'm chanting, I'm crying." Prabhupada said, "Me too." Such amazing statements, like so, like completely true and yet so brilliant. Yes, Prabhupada was in this way, teaching in so many ways. Sometimes teaching with humility. Sometimes strong. Mukunda was a musician. So, you know, when the Madanga came, then Mukunda immediately, you know, that was a big thing. Finally, Prabhupada used to play these bongos during the kirtans. And then the Madanga came, you know, all these different beats, and Prabhupada knew them all instead of speculating. So, Mukunda was greatly impressed, you know. So Mukunda wanted to learn. And Prabhupada taught him some beat, and then Mukunda, because he was like, you know, a professional musician, piano player, quite good. So he, Prabhupada began to, he taught him the beat, and then, well, after a moment, you know, he starts speeding it up, and Prabhupada said, "Slow down, do it properly, and listen." And he said, "Listen carefully." And then Mukunda, okay, for hours he was practicing, and then speeding it up a bit, and getting a bit better. And then at one moment, he sort of felt Prabhupada was watching him, and he looked, and he saw that Prabhupada had his eyes closed and was just listening to Mukunda's playing. And Mukunda was saying, "I had had many, many music teachers, but I never had a teacher who enjoyed my playing." Because the teacher is better than the student, than, you know, in lesson number one. Blunk, 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 blunk. You know, like it's a teacher, oh God, we're at the blunk, blunk stage, you know, like, very nice, you know. Carry on. Blunk, blunk, blunk. But Prabhupada was, even with basic Madanga beats, relishing, because he was seeing, he's making spiritual advancement now. He was seeing, this is transcendental. And thus he appreciated, and that appreciation purchased him. One time, in the very early matchless gifts days, you know, there were two devotees who had jobs. One was Bruce, the other was Steve, right? Okay, Steve later became Satsarup, and Steve, he was working in the social welfare office for the New York City. So one day, during lunchtime, his boss asked him to work overtime. Now, that was, of course, a total disaster because he was going to miss prasadam. And what to do, you know? So he was thinking, who in the temple could he ask to save a plate of prasadam? And he's thinking about this one, that, and in the end he concluded, no one except Swamiji.
Sure.
Right. So he called up the temple and he got like Swamiji on the phone. And like, you know, he asked Swamiji, I have to work overtime. Could you please save me a plate of prasad? So Swamiji says, yes, yes, no problem. So then, you know, he came later. He came. And then, you know, he asked Swamiji, the prasadam. Yes, yes. And Prabhupada came and he brought the plate of prasadam and he put it in front of him on the floor. And then Steve was looking on the floor. On the floor. I'm not a dog. You know what I mean? On the dog. And then he saw Prabhupada there smiling so much. I'm like, and you know, like, here, this plate, I've saved it for you. And then he felt so bad that he had such critical thoughts that he offered his obeisances to Prabhupada for the first time.
And Prabhupada said,
oh, thank you very much. So like this, Prabhupada conquered. You know, he conquered. Now that I'm talking about conquering, I have one more story, and this story is a story from Bhakti Churu Maharaj. And basically this story is that in the final days, when Prabhupada stayed in Vrindavan, at that time there were several servants, and one of them was Bhakti Churu Maharaj. So Prabhupada rang the bell, he had a bell, and when he rang the bell, the servant was meant to come. So they were taking turns, and it was Bhakti Churu Maharaj's turn, so Prabhupada rang the bell, so Bhakti Churu Maharaj came in, and Prabhupada said, I want some orange juice. He said, yes, I will make it. Yes. So 20 minutes, orange juice was not ready. So then, you know, the bell was ringing again. And this time the bell was ringing like very strong. And Prabhupada said, I wanted orange juice and you didn't bring it. You didn't follow my order. And he was getting like quite upset about it. And Bhakti Churu Maharaj was saying, like, I'm sorry, I'll do it straight away. And Prabhupada said, I don't want it anymore. I don't want it anymore. You know? And then Bhakti Churu Maharaj went to the kitchen and made the orange juice and brought it into Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada said, what's that? That's orange juice. Prabhupada said, take it away. I don't want it anymore. And then Bhakti Churu Maharaj stood there. And then he said to Prabhupada, he said, you can chastise me because I'm a rascal. I deserve it. But still, please drink this orange juice because it's good for you. then Prabhupada said, okay, give this one, give it. And he drank the orange juice. And he said, yeah, old men are grumpy sometimes. That is such a nice story because it shows like the principle of conquering, you know, of like how first Prabhupada conquered Bhakti Churu Maharaj to a point that he was ready to tolerate anything, any chastisement. He had conquered him to that point that he was ready to take any chastisement. And then, yes, you chastise me. Yes, I deserve it, please. But and then he conquered Prabhupada by saying, yes, yes, you chastise me. I deserve it. I don't mind that. But you please take the orange juice because it's good for me. And Prabhupada, of course, his health was very bad, so he needed something at that time. So yeah, so these are spiritual relationships. So when false pride is out of the way, then we can finally begin. We know the 10 offenses in the matter of chanting. And the first offense is to blaspheme the devotees who dedicated their lives to preaching the glories of the holy name. And we will do it when we think, I'm a tiger. Who is he? Just an ordinary cat at best. I'm a tiger. So, what does he think, you know, with his little cat brain, he has a blaspheming the devotees is natural when there's false pride. It will happen. It cannot be avoided. And this is our problem, because we are somewhere on the scale from in between mice and tiger. But that's the situation, and therefore we are not able to actually enter into Vaishnava relationships, which we see illustrated in exchanges between such Vaishnavas as Srila Prabhupada and Bhakti Churu Maharaj. When Vaishnavas are out to work for the interest of the other and not for one's self-interest. If we do things for our own interest, that's false pride. But if we work for the interest of Krishna or for the interest of the Vaishnavas, then we will conquer. Then we will conquer those Vaishnavas. So this is all these nice things we are seeing. So we have many teachers, Krishna himself, in the form of the holy names in our life. He is coming as Govinda, giving us the Bhagavad Gita. He's in our life. The pure devotees are in our life. And just the devotees in general are in our life. And all these elements are really available when we finally become humble. And that is such an effort, such a thing to develop humility. It's so difficult. It goes hand in hand with tolerance, because when you're humble, you don't. If you're not humble, you think, "Oh, how can they do this to me?" You know what I mean? I don't deserve this kind of behavior. You know what I mean? This is not right. How can it? But when we're humble, you think, "Yes, I deserve everything. They walk over me. Yes, you know, that's me. I'm meant for that only. I have no good qualities." So this is the key, to somehow or other take advantage of everything. Otherwise we have everything, but we can't take advantage of it. And that's what's happening to us, actually. And therefore we take a little bit of advantage. You know, we get so many treasures, and we do take a little bit of advantage, but not fully. Otherwise, you know, it's like what Srila Prabhupada said to this one devotee who was... It was 11 o'clock at night, and Prabhupada was sitting down to translate. And then Prabhupada asked this devotee, "Why don't you come and sit next to me, to, you know, assist me in the translating?" This devotee said, "Oh, Prabhupada, it's 11 o'clock, you know, I've been up the whole day, I'm really tired, I have to go to bed." And then Prabhupada said, "But I'm not going to bed." "Yes, but you are a pure devotee." And then Prabhupada said, "Why are you not a pure devotee?" So all these things. Why are we not a pure devotee? Because we're not taking full advantage. We're not taking full advantage of all the opportunities we have. And that's what we see in Prabhupada. Fully, you know, fully surrendered, fully taking advantage of all the opportunities, therefore fully humble, and like, not like, and then Krishna will protect you, everything goes on. But if then you don't think, "I'm the doer, right? And how will I do it?" We're not the doer, right? It's so, how can I ever do it? Krishna will do it if we are taking shelter of him. So these are the wonderful things. And then, you know, Krishna is the invisible thread which connects everything in this world. And then this invisible thread will come to the foreground. it will become visible. Krishna will become visible before all the things of the material world, and they will go in the background. And we'll see everywhere Krishna instead of all these material things. Just Krishna. Recognizing Krishna in everything, and seeing Krishna everywhere, and remembering him all the time, and relishing and discovering more and more about Krishna, and getting excited, and everything else looks so small and insignificant. And then, you know, then there's not enough time anymore. Avyarta kalatvam, we cannot waste a moment, every moment. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And it's like it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that as the devotees were taking prasadam, they were chanting in between bites. Or one can do it the other way around. Bite between chants. So in this way, every moment, fill it with Krishna. That is for the home. So how sweet, how nice. All right, so I've been sort of talking like a river that keeps on flowing wave after wave, and I don't know where this river is going to take us and if it's ever going to end. Ultimately, it says the river flows to the ocean. Premamritambo nidhi, Krishna kirtana gana nartana paro premamritambo nidhi. The six Goswamis were like just absorbed in an ocean of glorification of Krishna, filled with love for Krishna. So this ocean, this premamritambo, this ocean is interesting. Because in Alilila 4 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that the love of Srimati Radharani is always increasing. Why? Because her love is in competition with the qualities of Krishna. And each time that she discovers a new quality in Krishna, another aspect of Krishna, she immediately loves that also. And in that way, her love is always increasing. Now, that's not only happening to her, that's happening to everyone, to every living being. Everyone's love, every devotee's love is increasing like that. We discover more and more, and we like that also. It's a fact, you know. There is so much to discover. Each time there's something more, and in Krishna consciousness. And as we discover a new book, you know, you discover a new book, and then you read that, and then it's like it's a whole new world opens up, or a new place, you know, new holy places related to Krishna. Never knew they existed, and it's just amazing. Kanai Natashala. Have you been? No? Oh, such a nice place. It's a good guest house also. It is the place where separation first appeared. It is a place in the northern part of Bengal, just not so far from Gaya. And after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received initiation, on the way he came to Kanai Natashala, and he sat down to chant his Gayatri. And there are different Gayatri mantras, and one of the Gayatri mantras is dedicated to Gopal, right? Known as the Gopal Gayatri. So when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting the Gopal Gayatri, at that point he had a full darshan of Gopal. He saw Gopal. So he's completely in ecstasy, and the next moment Gopal disappeared. And then he had this mood, I saw him, and then I lost him, and where is he gone? Where is Krishna? This mood of looking for Krishna, where is Krishna? Which is the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in that place, Kanai Natashala, that's the place where it began. So we can go to chant Hare Krishna and think about it. Where is Krishna? Where is he? Where is Krishna? Just go there. Easy. Yeah, nothing stops you. Just your mind. Nothing else. Yeah, you can go anytime. It's not that expensive. You'll make it. somehow or another. By hook, not by crook. So there's so much to discover. And Srimati Radharani is saying, as she is discovering more aspects of Krishna, her love for Krishna is growing. So this is the ocean of transcendental love, where Krishna and his eternally liberated devotees are discovering each other. And their love is growing. As the love of Srimati Radharani is growing, the love of Krishna is growing for her. As our love for Krishna is growing, Krishna's love for us is growing. And in this way, the entire ocean of transcendental prem amritambo, this ocean of the nectar of love, is just growing and growing and growing eternally. And Krishna is looking at the few sour faces of those who are in the material world and who are not part of it, and say, like, join, come now. Well, it's so difficult, you know. Take this mercy, you know, I can't do it. It's not sure. It's like, I want to do it, but first I have to finish some things. I'm not quite ready. But then, if we don't learn the soft way, then kicks in the Purna Musika Bhav mechanism, and well, I mean, personally, I prefer to avoid that, yeah, to be a mouse again. It's a bit too much. But whatever Krishna wants, whatever he wants, we'll accept it, anything, and make the best of it, whatever it is. Don't lament. Oh, why these things are happening to me? Those who don't lament, but despite of the difficulty, are taking shelter. They become glorious. They attain Krishna. So in this way, there is no problem so great that it cannot be overcome by Krishna consciousness. There's nothing in this world that is such a problem that it cannot be overcome by Krishna consciousness. And in this way, we see everything as Krishna's mercy. Maybe he wants us to be mouse for a while. All right, be mouse. Right? And just be reduced. All right, take the karma, whatever it is, and take shelter of Krishna. Okay, Isa, and then we'll become part of that ocean of transcendental love, for sure, without a doubt. Okay, thank you for listening and to this lecture. Any questions, any comments? I didn't sing much today, but I'm happy about that because I'm not a machine and I can't, you know, sometimes it's like I'm a walking jukebox, you know. push the button, you know, extend a cue time. Oh yeah, it's going to rock, you know, it's going to rock, it's going to be fantastic, it's going to be flying cue time, somersaults and so on. Sorry guys, not today. Not in the mood. Yes, O Kulashekar.
Maharaj, you know, you've been glorifying the devotees.
You should speak loud because you're sitting 1 mile away and I'm deaf. And the other people also.
Maharaj, you know, you've been glorifying Satsarup Maharaj, Bhakti Chalu Maharaj. And I want to tell a little pastime that I had with you that glorifies your
life. Oh, no, you have to do it when I'm not here. Next time, only on my birthday can you do it in my presence, and otherwise, you know, forget it. Oh, come on. Then I'll do a Bhakti Chiru Maharaj on you, and if you glorify Bhakti Chiru Maharaj, he glorifies you double.
Thank you. Subhal told me to drive Maharaj to Emmanuel. So with the old car, I drove Maharaj to Emmanuel. We went to Sachi Kumar's house and we did a program at Narayani Mataji and Srivasa's parents' house. And then we stayed at Sachi Kumar's parents' house. And then I developed a fever. So the next morning, like, you know, because I was feeling cold, I filled the tub with water, hot water, and I submerged myself. And Maharaj, his breakfast was ready, and he was about to take prasad. And he sent Adi Keshava to find out where I am. So Adi Keshava knocked at the bathroom door, and I told him, you know what, I'm having a bath, and tell Maharaj to go ahead. But Adi Keshava came back and he said that Maharaj said that he's not going to take prasad without me. So he's going to wait for me to finish bath and then he's going to take prasad. So quickly, I, you know, got out of the shower, changed, and I came, and Maharaj waited for me, and he, and both of us took prasad. And I felt that, you know, Maharaj, you know, I am known as an outcast.
Normal social behavior, I would say, nothing special.
You know, I'm like an outcast. And you know, that may be true,
but at the same time, you know, I mean.
So many people give a hard time. And sometimes I think of even leaving, but when
have
I
you heard of love, like, every action has a reaction.
And I want to thank Maharaj for being so loving and so kind to me, and that helps me to stick around. Sometimes I just think, let me just pack it up and go back to my old ways. But the love that Maharaj shows, not only to me, but to everybody, it helps me to stick around because of the love, you know, I experienced. Thank you, Maharaj. Okay. Hare Krishna.
What to do? Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I think somewhere along the line, we're definitely not going to do this alone, and this Krishna consciousness. I mean, the fact that we're here tonight together, it helps. We all were stuck in the traffic, I guess, at one point, some a little more than others. And so it is an austerity to get to this place. But this is what we do. We just take the trouble to go and to hear something, some Krishna katha, because this is what nourishes us. We depend on each other. So somehow or other, when we stay close, like about Burijan Prabhu, you know, he, after 40 years, because he joined a long time ago in 1967, so the 40 years mark was in the year 2007, a long time ago. So then he was, and he wrote a Vyasa Pujarim offering that year, and basically he said, "My dear Srila Prabhupada, I'm sorry to say, I have nothing to report. I didn't do anything extraordinary. I didn't distribute any books. I didn't make any devotees. I didn't open any temples. I really didn't do anything special this year." He said, like, there's nothing I can report. He said, "The only thing I can say is, I'm still here." And that was the offering. And it was really like, bang, it had power, you know, like 40 years, still here. Yeah, I mean, you know. So that's one good thing we can say about Kulashekhar. He is still here. That's very good. Yes, somehow or other. We must stay. Whatever happens, we must stay. Never leave the waters. Because, you know, that's when everything goes down, when our enthusiasm goes down, when we feel weak, when our chanting goes down, when the standards go down, when everything goes down in spiritual life, there is only one place where it can be revived. in the association of devotees. You know, so therefore, somehow, we just stick it out with the devotees. Whatever happens, yes, that's where everything will be revived.
Sort of about to escape, begin to think about escaping.
Unless someone has one more question, then I'll try to answer that one. Otherwise, okay.
Just wondering, in terms of humility, one needs to be honest, though. How can one develop honesty?
Yeah, I mean, the connection between how can one develop humility in order to be humble, one has to be honest, he would say. How can we develop honesty? It's interesting because we're speaking about false pride as the opposite of humility. And that means we're having a false profile, and we're like playing a role to impress others. That's what false pride is about. And we hide who we really are. Therefore, honesty and humility go hand in hand, because when we get honest, then we all have to admit that we're not so great. See, this is once you start getting honest, and honestly speaking, I make mistakes. Many, honestly speaking, you know, you can. If you just go to that exercise, honestly, dot dot dot, and then fill it in, you know, and then again, you know, and like try it 100 times, and we'll find. Yes, I guess we have to make some conscious efforts like that to become honest. You know, of course, everyone has lived with a facade throughout his life. Everyone is lying every day so many times. Everyone, it's the second nature. So many lies have grown into a mythology. You know, we have our own mythology of lies that we've told our whole life, and it's become the truth, it's become reality. And like this, we lie, white lies, you know, all kinds of lies. In every color of the rainbow, you know, a little lie out of convenience, you know, I mean, it's like diplomacy, diplomacy is another way of, like, lying, and there's endless ways. Lawyer means liar. Yes, the joke, there was a ship and it was sinking and there were sharks everywhere, and this lawyer jumped into the water and he swam to the shore and the sharks never touched him. And people were asking, how come the sharks never touched you? He said, professional courtesy. So what to say? The world is the world. Right? It's just full of lies. Sir, this car. My grandmother. She only used it for shopping. It may be 10 years old, but it hardly has any mileage on it, because Granny, right? And she really maintained it. That's how my granny was. You know, she would look after things, you know. Really, yeah. This car, it was a jewel, right? Hardly as any kilometers on the clock. Right? As good as new. 20 years old. Goes away for the steal today. Business. Right? Money makes the world go on. So many. So, to not lie, to be honest, honestly speaking, there's, at least we have to be so honest that we go before the deities of Sisikoi Nitai, Nitai Wahari, and say, to be honest, you know, I can't even be honest. Please help me. Yeah, well, it's quick.
Maharaj, how do the advanced devotees who possess all good qualities honestly feel themselves to possess no good qualities?
Everyone's serving Krishna so nicely. It's like, can you look at all these devotees? They're so nice. They do so many, all without any remuneration. So many nice things. So, like that, we're seeing all the good qualities of everyone else. Then they can see it. I'm just, you know, I'm just getting some glory, but I'm not really doing anything. Not much. Devotees, look what they're doing. Yeah. Look around. It's not difficult. Just look at all the good qualities of everybody. It's amazing. Okay, thank you so much. I think I'll take your leave. It was nice that you all came. I appreciate it very much on a weekday. I'll be back in